I'll call the Environment Policy Oversight Committee to order for April 2nd. First thing on the agenda, we do need to approve the minutes for March 26th. And Representative Luden, would you like to move the minutes?
I would, Mr. Chair. I move the option of the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Luden moves the minutes for March 26th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. We are going to be hearing a number of bills today, starting off with House File 1539, Representative Rosenthal. And I will move House File 1539, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And welcome, Representative Rosenthal, and
thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
To the bill. Sure. You do have two amendments.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and I will move the two amendments that you have here. I'll move the A2 amendment, and this is to get the bill in the shape and form that the author would like. So all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. An amendment is adopted. There is also the A3 amendment. And again, to get the bill in the shape and form that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And Representative Rosenthal to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a bill brought to me by Nine Mile Creek, the watershed district. It called for the temporary drawdown of lakes. I happen to bump into this one lake personally, as Representative Loon has a portion of this lake as well. What it does is it allows watershed districts to draw down lakes to kill noxious weeds without using chemicals. And as it currently stands, you need to get 100% of the homeowners on the lake to approve this, and that proves to be a challenge. And this bill will reduce that to 60% and also allows watershed districts throughout the state to think about doing the same thing. And defer to my testimony from the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. And is it Mr. Heiniger?
My name is Kevin Bogalke, Administrator for the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District. Thank you for having us this afternoon. As Representative Rosenthal stated, the bill is for allowing temporary drawdowns of public waters to address water quality issues. It's currently allowed underneath state rule, but as was stated, it requires 100% landowner participation and consent in order to receive the Department of Natural Resources Division of Waters permit to conduct the drawdown. We were fortunate enough that we essentially only had 10 property owners, 9 private residential owners, and 1 public agency, that being the Three Rivers Park District. However, it did take us an additional 6 to 8 months worth of time to acquire those landowner signatures and delay the project for a year, not only allowing the invasive plant species curly leaf pondweed, which we're trying to address to further expand, but also resulted in some additional costs due to the delays. What this bill would allow us to do is, instead of requiring the 100% landowner consent, it would reduce that to 60%. And the reason we brought the bill forward is actually at the recommendation of one of the landowners that actually eventually signed on to the project. He had said, you know, they raised concern and voiced raised some issues regarding the project because they felt they didn't have enough information on it. And it basically came down to a decision that an individual landowner can stop a project for the public welfare and the improvement of water quality. And he did not feel that that was something that you have, where you have a situation where you have scientists, you have engineers, you have public agencies that have spent time and energy developing a project, to have it go down to one property owner that may not approve of the project because of some bad relationships historically. We are fortunate that we didn't have any poor relationships with the landowners, but it did result in us needing an additional, like I said, 6 to 8 months worth of time. And this landowner felt that it was better to require some additional information, and he was he was in public information meetings, which this bill does require prior to hosting public hearings. And he also felt that the information standpoint is important, but having an individual single property owner be able to stop a project it wasn't right, and he encouraged pursuing reducing it down to a majority, which is what was passed in the Senate, and we're comfortable with the 60% requirement, as is the bill in the bill before you this evening.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bigelke, and I would I'm not sure how many drawdowns are done, but I would guess that this has been a problem in other cases as well. Mr. Bigelke, do you have any information?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it's an approach that, you know, it's following more natural process. We're trying to mimic an extreme drought condition that shallow lakes typically would have gone through over the course of time. As we've developed, we've, you know, put on control structures and outlets on shallow lakes. We've increased the amount of stormwater input into those lakes and essentially maintained relatively static water conditions. That's not good for the ecological health of the system. Drawdowns, because of the essentially drastic nature, are typically not attempted, either because they don't have the outlet means due to an outlet on a control structure on the lake, or simply due to cost, or in some cases, landowner consent. You know, where if you have a lake where you have 30, 60, 100 landowners, receiving 100% landowner consent to do that project is essentially impossible.
Thank you, Mr. Bigelke. Any questions? Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the language worries me a little bit. I mean, it's true, it's tough to get 100%, but when, what if you've got the people living around the lake that are living there because they're wealthy and they want to enjoy the recreation on the lake, don't realize anything about the habitat of the lake or the history or the purpose or the hunting and the waterfall, and you've got different opinions, and just to get a majority for the drawdown. This is all public waters, not any specific project. I mean, it doesn't have to be for a waterfall or vegetation problem to propagate ducks. It's just for any public water.
This would be, Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish, this would be for the improvement of water quality, habitat, wildlife, breeding grounds, native vegetation reestablishment on public waters. It's to enhance the overall health of the ecosystem in a water body, and so that'd be to address that, and you're right in that. There are many different opinions, and the approaches and desires to move forward with, or lack thereof, in terms of interest to move forward with the project, but we had those very same concerns voiced to us throughout the process in developing this project.
And it is not just a simple majority, but a super majority that would be required, 60%, which, and again, it is almost impossible probably to get 100%.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's correct. One of the, in developing the bill, one of the things we had sort of tossed around is which approach to take. We could go with the, you know, a majority or 60% of the lakeshore distance versus the 60% of lakeshore owners. And from an ecological standpoint, you would want to think you want to have a majority or 60% of the lakeshore distance. The problem with that is that, in our case on Northwest and Southwest Anderson, where you have a public entity that owns upwards of 90% of the lakeshore, we could have simply gone to Three Rivers Park District, gotten their consent, and eliminated any of the other voices of concern with private residents. So the language of the bill is actually for 60% of lakeshore owners, and so that way we're able to cover more of the private residential concerns, not just the distance of land.
Okay. And Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you say there was an invasive that you were fighting here? Did I hear that right?
Mr. Bigelke.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is correct. We're what we're trying to take care of is a plant called curly leaf pondweed. It's pretty prominent amongst throughout the state of Minnesota. In our case, we had 40 to 50% coverage, and it tended to be expanding over the number of years that we've been monitoring the lake. It's also, we're also attempting to address an internal phosphorus loading issue in the lake that's tied to the curly leaf pond weed dying off early in the summer and releasing its nutrients back into the water column and denuding the lake sediments of vegetation and stirring up, being able to stir up the lake sediments again, also releasing the nutrients.
And Representative Wagenius.
I understand the frustration folks are having with curly leaf pond weed, but you have no criteria in this bill for, it's just, you know, the commissioner deems it to be beneficial and in the public interest. It seems to me that without criteria, you're just leaving the DNR open for lawsuit. Because if I didn't like the decision, and I could say that this is an arbitrary and capricious decision on part of the commissioner, and I'd sue. And so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how many lawsuits is the DNR going to be susceptible to because there are absolutely no criteria in this bill and no standards for the commissioner to follow. Why didn't you put something in, some bumper, bumpers here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, a lot of the criteria that you're seeking is in state rule already in order to receive the permit. We've, in order for us to initiate the project, it's not an arbitrary approach to drain a lake in a highly urbanized residential community that Bloomington and Eden Prairie are. It's been developed with 30 years worth of water quality data, plant and vegetation surveys on the lake, and that's all been put in feasibility reports and engineers' reports in order to look at various options to address the problem. And all of that is presented to the DNR in their permitting process and is required to receive the permit.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
But that's not what the bill says. That's my question. It just says the commissioner deems the project to be beneficial and in the public interest. So it doesn't refer back to rules or statutes or guidelines. I'm not in guidelines, rules or statutes. It just says the project is beneficial in the public interest. So if I was one of those landowners who was not in the 60% and said, I don't like what you guys are doing, I take you to court.
And
I think I would say that decision was arbitrary and capricious because there were no standards by which you did this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it appears that the bill probably goes further beyond what was intended in that case. But Mr. Bigalke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, committee members, the language in terms of the commissioner deeming the project beneficial and in the public interest is existing language underneath DNR rules permitting, giving their ability to permit. I know Julie Ekman's in the audience with the DNR Division of Water. She may be able to address that better than I, but that's existing language. Even under the 100%, it's requirement that the commissioner ultimately has the authority to deem whether or not the project is in the public's best interest.
Okay. I don't know if there's Representative Wagenius. Go ahead.
But if 100% of people agree, then not one of them can sue because they've already agreed. We have a different situation here when you've got 40% of the people who are not agreeing. And I mean, I hear where what you're wanting to do, but it does feel that this language is needs help.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
It still has to go through all the proceedings that it would under the 100% rule. It has to have public hearing. It has to go through and meet all these criteria that are in statute today. So all it's doing is it's being heard in the same places. It's just reducing from 100% to 60%, but it's following the same route. If you read down a little further, it does, I believe, speak to that a little bit.
Thank you. And Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bergalke, I'm looking at number three and have a practical question. I think maybe a water body that you're aware of. from your past work area, but I have a meeting in a week with the residents around Rogers Lake and Mendota Heights, and they're concerned about early leaf pondweed and other invasives. So the way this is written, I mean, if there is all private landowners or if there's a mix of public landowners and private landowners, the 60% is of the private, or is it of all landowners?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the language is of all landowners. So we need to have, if the city owns the land or if the county or a Soil and Water Conservation District, whoever owns the land, they're considered one of the landowners that we would need to have consent. That does a couple things. It's helping establish a partnership and a cooperative relationship with your other local government units as well as the general public.
Okay. Representative Hansen, and just to follow up for further clarification, so it's the number of landowners, not 60% of, say, shoreline ownership, but if there, it's just the number of landowners, both public and private.
Correct.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, or maybe this question is for the Chair, are we going to hear from the DNR?
I was actually going to ask that the DNR, if somebody could come forward from the DNR to address the question that Representative Logini has had. And as far as if it's just following current practices, which it sounds as though it is. In that case, I'm not sure if you can avoid potential lawsuits from people who disagree, no matter what the criteria probably is. There probably still be lawsuits that could come forward. But go ahead, if you could identify yourself for the tape, please.
I'm Julie Eklund with the DNR Division of Waters, and I am our permit program's supervisor. Chair and Representative Logini, this project would still have to go through our permitting process, so nothing in that regard has changed. It's just simply allowing projects that are for the public benefit to go forward without undue roadblocks. And we support in that regard.
Okay. So thank you, Ms. Eckman. And Representative McNamara has a question.
I think we've all got a lot of the same concerns, and actually you've heard from Representative Cornish and Representative Hansen, Representative Logini, and now myself, and I think we're probably four large proponents of the idea of drawdown. My reservation here is I want to be really careful if we're doing something that 40% of the people don't like, because if all of a sudden those people get up in arms and come back here and get legislation passed, we may be moving backwards on drawdown. Representative Rosenthal, you mentioned, I believe, that you had 90% in this individual case, and maybe now you have 100% of the landowners. Wasn't there 10 landowners involved here, and 9 of them were with you, or am I not understanding that?
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McNamara. I door knocked this area. A portion of it abuts Representative Loon's district. And I was there after the drawdown, during the drawdown. And they were talking about the process and how it was really, really difficult for them because one of their neighbors was just holding out. And they wanted their lake back with the best quality of water and habitat as quickly as possible. And this one person was able to string them along for a number of months or years. And it was they needed 100% approval.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'd like to hear from the rest of the people on the committee, but I think we may want to consider that this percentage be somewhat larger than 60%. And I know there's a specific instance that... I'm just wondering, does the DNR have feelings on that? You've had to operate within the 100% constraints, and you probably have some examples of a small minority being opposed to it. And I've also got other concern where we're dealing with the raw numbers of landowners. It's possible 40% of the landowners maybe could own a super, super majority of the amount of land. So we may have a situation where 6 landowners own just a fraction of the land abutting this water body. I'm also concerned about that. So I guess at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear what other people have to say, but I think we have to be really careful that these things are controversial, and sometimes in the beginning people don't realize how great they are, and I just want to be really careful to lose this.
And I don't know if Ms. Ekman, you wanted to respond to
Chairman and committee members. I do believe that the permitting process is very thorough in its review, and this bill makes sure that there is a public hearing, so we wouldn't take this lightly when it came to us for a permit. If it truly was that there are a significant number of people that had concerns, we would want the permit applicant to address that to our satisfaction. So as far as the percentage, we don't know what the magic percentage would be, but the purpose was that there are good projects out there being proposed by public entities for public benefit, and we want to find a way to help those projects go forward a little bit easier.
Okay, and Ms. Ekman, maybe you could give us a little information about how often the drawdowns take place, and in the case of opposition, how much opposition is usually encountered? Is it usually just one or two landowners out of many, or is there sometimes much more significant opposition that is encountered? I don't know if you have information on that.
Chairman and committee members, I really don't have information on that. I could research that and get back to you on that.
And that could maybe be helpful, too, in trying to determine what the right number would be. I think 100% obviously is almost unworkable, but you know, there are concerns about 60% maybe going too far the other way. So, Representative Turner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have my mayor from one of my cities in Apple Valley, where we have a situation on a lake where it's basically one holdout out of over 50. And I think if the percentage is, if we're not comfortable with 60% or what have you, I think if it was 70% or so, I think that would be fine. But I think what we're trying to do is have a handful of people or a few holdouts that change the whole project that the city and the homeowners have put a lot of time into. And so she's here to testify as well when you get to the testifiers, but I think that might shed some more information on her experiences with the city and that.
Okay. And Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rosenthal. Did you say the Senate passed it through committees with the majority, so that's what is moving and the Senate is a majority?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenthal. That's
correct. Okay. Representative Wagenius.
And
Representative Rosenthal.
To clarify, it was that Representative Loon's good advice that we raised it to 60%, and I think that was a very good amendment.
Representative Wagenius.
Let me make a suggestion for you to think about, and one of the ways to avoid a lawsuit that says this is arbitrary and capricious, because I think that's what courts could do, is on line 1.10, after the word beneficial, and make a finding of fact that the drawdown is. I'm not going to offer that as amendment, but I want you to consider that right now, because if the commissioner makes the findings of fact, a court is most likely to uphold those findings of fact. But if there are no findings of fact, it's just too easy a shot for a lawsuit. So I would say that would be one way to help this along.
Okay. Mr. Bigelke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rodriguez, I think that's a great suggestion. In fact, it's I would say that's already being followed and is a requirement of watershed districts underneath the 103D petitioning basic water management process, where holding a public hearing in order for us to make a decision, we have to have a finding of fact. In fact, we put together a document that we titled Finding of Fact that shows that the benefits for the project are outweighing the cost, and that is submitted as part of our permit requirements, and it's also, you know, it's part of the public hearing process. I would say for any entity to decide to move forward on it, they're going to have some sort of finding of fact documentation that's showing that the costs are outweighing the benefits, or the benefits, excuse me, are outweighing the cost to proceed with the project.
Representative Borghini.
Well, there's two notions here, and let's not mix them up. This isn't a cost-benefit analysis that we're doing here. We're making a, this isn't a public interest analysis, so it's not a cost-benefit analysis. But this is new language, and new language would supersede other language. And so if we're going to be clear, I think we have to say that in here there are findings of fact. But, you know, I want just members to consider that as we talk about the percentage also. I think this would help you out.
And Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, and the testifier, just a couple of questions and a follow-up. First of all, how long have you worked for Waters?
Ms. Eckman.
Chair and team members, I have worked for the Division of Waters for 14 years.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think a lake level discussion on a lake is controversial and causing calls and a hot button point for the DNR when you fluctuate it even a couple inches either way?
On a scale, excuse me?
Of 1 to 10 as far as controversy that it creates and calls to the DNR and all sorts of kebabs of changing water levels.
Ms. Ackman?
Chair, committee members, I'd have to say it's probably about an 8, I don't know. But if you're, in this case, this is a temporary drawdown. This isn't a permanent change to water levels.
Representative Rosenthal, I'm not trying to derail your bill, but my concerns are, I had a lake called Lake O'Brien, where one of my friends up there was one of the probably only three people on the whole lake that didn't want the lake raised. And this is, I know it's a raise, but it's a fluctuation in water level. And it just came out, Mr. Lacimo emailed me the PDF, their decision. And even though there was a couple landowners that didn't agree and it required 100%, they went around and made some kind of decision based on a prescriptive easement where even though the lake level was obtained illegally by somebody putting a block because it was in there for 15 years, it was now the new established level and disappointed my friends very much. So I'm really worried about the percentage of this. 100%, maybe that is too big, but it's 60% is just too easy to obtain. And I think it should be controversial and it should be really transparent. And so I'm just encouraging you to do something with the percentage and the other language with Representative Wagenius.
Okay. Representative
Cornish, I understand your concern. And I live on a lake. Was told that it's not one that can be fixed. Was not happy to hear that. I understand your concern and certainly would be willing to talk about the percentage.
And I guess Representative McNamara is next.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering if we were going to hear from the other testifiers, Ducks Unlimited specifically.
Yes.
And whenever, okay, whenever we do, I've got questions at that time.
Okay. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a brief comment. I am a co-author of this legislation with Representative Rosenthal, and I don't know that we came to the numbers through any scientific or mathematical formula. Again, you know, as originally drafted, the legislation just said a majority, and in our discussions about it, because this particular situation happened to affect both of our districts, you know, 50 or 51% certainly felt like not a big enough hurdle, and we didn't want the burden to really fall on one landowner and the intense pressure there. And so, you know, I don't know how he feels about it, but again, I think certainly I would be amenable if the committee felt we needed to up that and be interested in any of the testifiers' comments. But again, I think it's just what we're trying to get to is, I think, a reasonable standard in which the DNR can conduct these with, you know, all of the appropriate public hearings and public input. We certainly don't want them at a whim determining that they're going to draw down a lake without the landowner's consent. But again, you know, the ability for one person to hold up a project, which was the experience that we had, I think is too high a hurdle for this type of situation.
Any other questions before we move on to the other testifiers? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Bogalke and Ms. Ekman.
Thank you.
We do have two other testifiers, Ryan Heiniger from Ducks Unlimited. I hope I pronounced your name right. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Heiniger. I am the Director of Conservation Programs for Ducks Unlimited here in Minnesota. Just to start off with maybe a little bit of an overview of how this relates to our work. Through our Living Lakes Initiative, Ducks Unlimited works with the Department of Natural Resources, landowners, and other partners throughout the state to restore, enhance, and protect shallow lakes and large wetlands. The ability to manage water levels on a temporary and periodic basis is really a prerequisite to the success of bringing so many of these shallow lakes back to life. I had a few comments that I came into this hearing wanting to say, but based on what has been said already and with the A2 amendment, I'll maybe redirect. And let me just also preface my comments by saying that we take landowner and riparian rights very, very seriously. In fact, I have one staff member on board that essentially all he does is reach out to private landowners well in advance after some of these shallow lakes and large marshes have been identified through a science-based and strategic planning process to develop the relationships, to get them to understand why we're proposing this, to try to get their buy-in, to address any of their concerns. And really one of the crux of all this situation has to do with there's only four different ways, as I understand it, of how these shallow lakes can be managed in terms of the water levels. Really, there's situations that the wetlands or the shallow lake is wholly contained within public land, such as a wildlife management area, where the lake designation process, 97A101, has already taken into effect. That really is only 40 lakes to date out of about 5,000 different shallow lakes in the state. Just to put it in perspective, the DNR can obtain donated or acquired flow easements that grant that right to the department, or getting one-time permission. I guess that's where this legislation comes into play. We believe that adjusting the permission from 100% unanimous requirement down to a majority makes sense, so we're very thankful that Representative Rosenthal and Senator Kielash have introduced this legislation. So let me just try to take a little different tact with the situation that we're facing out in the field with all these different lakes and wetlands that are severely degraded when it comes to their water quality and lack of aquatic vegetation. From a philosophical standpoint, I wonder whose responsibility or who has the jurisdiction to manage public waters. And in so many cases, what we're finding out now through the monitoring efforts, these bodies of water are impaired by state and federal standards, meaning they either are or will be on the state 303B impaired waters list because of a source of impairment ranging from turbidity, meaning that the Secchi disk readings are just below the standards, or the nutrient concentrations like phosphorus are sky high and well above state and federal standards. So in these situations, and for wetlands and shallow lakes that are not within state or federal lands and have not been designated, whose responsibility is it to make sure that they're switched from a turbid and an impaired condition back to a clear water condition? I guess I would challenge the committee to be thinking about how we could help empower the DNR and help empower the Pollution Control Agency to work proactively with landowners to be able to get these wetlands back in quality condition, not only for water quality, but certainly for wildlife and waterfowl. So with that, I guess I would end my remarks and stand for any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Heiniger. Any questions? Okay, I see none. Thank you again. And next we have Ms. Mary Hammond-Roland here, Mayor of Apple Valley. So welcome, Mayor.
Thank you.
And if you could state your name for the record, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Pekin. My name is Mary Hammond-Roland. I'm the mayor of Apple Valley.
And I want to recognize right away that I've brought with me some citizens that live, residents that live right on the lake of Long Lake in Apple Valley. It's a gorgeous lake. And they are over to my left here, and I will make some comments about them. But I also want to tell you that they have a beautiful book with them that shows the wildlife that lives in Apple Valley. You might think this is up north or some other place, but it's absolutely gorgeous. I want to thank Representative Phil Sterner for his work with our community and the service at the Capitol. Thank you, Phil, for alerting us to this afternoon. In recent days, we've heard the news about the flooding here in the state of Minnesota and all the challenges that the people in the areas of the Red River have faced. That's an issue of water quantity, and we all certainly, our hearts go out to them, and we know how important it is that we deal with those issues. But today what we have before us relates to the water quality. And I'm just going to steer away a little bit from my prepared marks to say that these good people and I and the City Council and the staff of Apple Valley have been, over the last years, the 11 years that I've been the mayor, have really established quite a wonderful working relationship. Prior to that, there had been difficult times in Apple Valley where development occurred and there wasn't necessarily a meeting of the minds. But I think today we do have that sense of collaboration and meeting of the minds. You understand that the federal and state laws have established a framework for addressing impaired waters. But the actual work in the field is largely being done by us, the local government, in partnership with the residents who reside around these impacted waters. In Apple Valley, we have worked effectively with our citizens to develop a comprehensive water quality improvement plan. This plan would allow us to move forward and collaborate in ways with our residents to address the impaired waters. Al Kettlecamp, Joey Kettlecamp, and Steve Russell have been active residents and homeowners on Apple Valley's Long Lake and have displayed remarkable leadership in trying to improve water quality in our community. Long Lake is a shallow lake. We all agree that this bill is critical to our efforts to implement the type of lake improvements necessary in Apple Valley. Water quality on Long Lake and adjacent Farquhar has declined significantly and severely since the mid-90s. Algae blooms now occur throughout much of the summer season, negatively impacting recreational use and as well as the aesthetic enjoyment. At times, the phosphorus concentration significantly exceeds the MPGA standards. The non-native curly leaf pondweed grows at a nuisance level in this lake, and I can tell you that it is something when you talk about what is the temperature or the emotional aspect of people on the lake. They are upset. They are greatly upset that the water quality is so poor. And I want to also tell you that the drawdown that would occur on this lake to improve the water quality, which was gone through a scientific analysis to be able to see that this could be a beneficial solution, would be done in the wintertime. It's a winter drawdown. This bill would provide us with flexibility, which is critically needed to move forward with our collaborative relationship with our residences. So I urge you to favorably consider this. I also would appreciate the tweaking of to assure that we are, Representative Virginia, that we do want to make sure that this is our two-thirds or a higher number would be very comfortable with our residents in Apple Valley. And we also believe that finding the fact would be, that would be something good for us because we want to make sure that it is effectively done in our city, and we want to work with the residents of our city and assure that we do this in a proper way. So I would stand for questions if there aren't are any. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. And are there any questions for the mayor?
Are there any questions for our residents on Long Lake? Would this be helpful?
Sure. So, we'll have to continue. Yes, Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mayor. We were discussing percentages when you mentioned the percentage, so I just want to ask, seeing as the Senate is at 50%, that would a 75% requirement have hindered your project in Apple Valley?
Representative Hansen, thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. It would not. In fact, most of the people on Long Lake would consider this something that they would be very happy, that they've waited for years to have this happen. There may be, and I don't even know that for sure is one person, maybe.
Okay. And Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rosenthal, with the projects you're aware of and as the author of the bill, 75% have hindered the project for the intent of your bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Rosenthal.
Hansen. I've just been informed, as Jennifer said, as Representative Loon said, the intent is not the percent. We just want to be able to move these projects forward. So 75% would be acceptable to me, and the language that Representative Lagunia suggested would be fine with us as well.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I would move to strike the 60% and put in 75% on at least 75% on line 1.2 of the language that was from the A2 amendment. That would be the correct way to make that.
Yeah, I believe that would be the correct way. Again, the A2 amendment, which has already been passed, line 1.2, the amendment is to strike 60 and insert 75. Any discussion to the amendment? Okay, I see no discussion or questions. So, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Any further questions? Representative Lagunias.
Well, let's ask, would it be appropriate for me to offer an amendment about findings of fact?
Mr. Chair, Representative, be appreciated.
Let's do that then. I'm going to make a motion, Mr. Chair, after on 1.10, after and, add, make finding a fact that the drawdown is.
Okay. And Representative Lagunias moves to an oral amendment to amend line 1.10. After and, insert, makes a finding of fact. Makes findings of fact that the drawdown is. Again, the sentence will read, the commissioner deems the project to be beneficial and makes findings of fact that the drawdown is in the public interest. And Representative Lagunias.
I'll just speak to that for a second. See, if a court sees that a commissioner has made findings of fact and actually has some data to back it up, and these folks are saying there's going to be data, then the court is going to defer to those findings of fact. Mm-hmm. And I think it would save us all in the long run.
Okay. And Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, does that need to be plural? That would be my question. If there is only one finding.
And Representative Lagunias.
I've never seen one finding, Representative Purcell. Usually there are more than one.
I understand. I'm just not trying to devil's advocate here, Mr. Chair. But if it was curly leaf pond, we could say it was more than one weed, probably. But, that's... I'll be quiet.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Wagenius renews her motion to amend the bill as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Any other discussion to the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 1539 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next, Representative Jackson, House File 1900. And I will move that House File 1900 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus landfill. And there are there is one amendment, the A2 amendment.
That's correct.
And I will also move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape and form that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And Representative Jackson, welcome to the bill as amended.
Thank you. I'd like to refer to the two maps that you will be handed. And I'm hoping that, is this one of them? Everyone getting it? Okay.
We do have them.
Wonderful. The larger map of Mille Lacs Township shows in blue the Rum River, and what's designated in yellow is the land designated as wild and scenic under state statutes from, I believe, around mid-1970s. Until you get within the city limits of Malacca, and you see there is a 300-foot corridor on either side of the river. At the time of its passage, the commissioner of the DNR was allowed to designate up to 320 acres per mile of river. And in this area, for the most part, did just that. And as you can see, the river, of course, is windy, but this is a pretty rural area, and the designations were done in a fairly simple way by using tax parcels. So you'll see that basically 80-acre parcels, 40-acre parcels, 20-acre parcels, some of which are quite a distance away. My bill today seeks to take 50 acres that's designated on this as a red upside-down L, where it says Jeffrey and Stephanie Anderson, 50 acres of that out. And, of course, the question would be why. Well, and why in this way? I have been working with Director of Water Kent Lacusmo, and we've been talking about really taking a good hard look at the wild and scenic, because the process set forth right now to get land out is bureaucratic, takes forever, and it's not user-friendly, and that's from Kent's description. And so we agreed that, you know, it's nothing that we can do right now, but perhaps by next year we can figure out a way to get land in, out, and also to do something akin to a conditional use or a variance, because there are uses that folks who live along the river would like to have that weren't even contemplated back in the mid-70s. And Mr. Lacusmo's example was a bed and breakfast. It would not be allowed in wild and scenic, even though it's very low impact, and it's only because, you know, we really didn't have bed and breakfast. This map here has just a red designation of what portion is in wild and scenic. It's taking the Anderson property and squeezing it down. And what my bill originally designated to keep in was bounded by the green, and it consisted of a 20-acre parcel. In discussing this with Mr. Lacusmo of the DNR, he said the DNR would have no objection if we added another 10 acres, and that my amendment
now describe the yellow boundary line, so that this upside down L is what we are removing. It's just the 50 acres. A normal question would be, why don't we just take the current route to attempt to get this land out of the designation? But time is of the essence now. I'm going to go back to this map. I want everyone to note where Highway 169 is. Highway 169 just received the okay to use some of the federal recovery funds, and they're going to be working on the southbound lane. But that happens quickly. That's going to be happening, I believe, in the next 18 months. And there is gravel on the portion of the property that we wish to remove. Removing gravel is not one of the permitted activities in Wild and Scenic right now. It's a wonderful site in that it's so close to the actual work site that it minimizes even the carbon footprint of hauling gravel there. And we've got a shortage in the area. Also, when land is taken out, this 50 acres, the commissioner is free to seek to put acreage back in, because the law still says you can designate up to 320 acres per mile of river. We believe that we have kept a good buffer, anywhere from 650 to maybe 850 feet of buffer. We've had the DNR area hydrologist and our county zoning people walk the entire area. And I have been in contact even with our wetland specialist, because the effect of wetlands, even though it's not the effect of wetlands, it could be an issue, though the Wetland Preservation Act has to be adhere to whether or not property is in or outside of the Wild and Scenic. And I hope that's enough of an explanation of why I'm here and why the timing. But I would stand for questions.
Any questions for Representative Jackson? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Representative Jackson. Is this L-shaped location the only place in that area that has gravel available?
Representative Jackson.
Well, there are some gravel sites elsewhere, but this specific one has a great deal of high-quality gravel, and the owners have already been contacted about using it for Highway 169. I don't know of anything. I know maybe one gravel pit near my house that's a little close to 169, but it's pretty spent, and the quality is a lot lower.
Any other questions? Okay, I see no. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Cody Jackson. We did have some discussions on this earlier, and of course, I mentioned my concern for precedent setting, with changing boundaries of established Wild and Scenic rivers, and also with the concept of, the gravel pit. Should this change be made, what provisions are in place or likely to be in place to prevent any problems from the area, which will be a drainage, or a gravel pit, impacting the river area. Were you able to talk with anyone since we had visited earlier with that issue?
Mr. Chair and Representative Taylor, yes, I have. And in fact, when I was speaking to Representative Hansen, he had the same concern that this would start a nibbling away. However, because the law has not changed that up to 320 acres can be designated, if you look at this map again, you will see there are areas with very little corridor, very little buffer, and it's still possible to add to Wild and Scenic. Also, while, again, this is not the preferred method, it's an unusual time is of the essence occurrence, and I'm very committed to continue to work with the DNR Waters Director to revamp, as necessary, the whole Wild and Scenic process of addressing land in and out. And as I was reading the Wild Scenic Statute in its annotated form, I surmised that a maximum was set, not because it was all will always be necessary to fulfill the intent of the statute, but because there needs to simply be a maximum amount. The statute, the intent of the statute is as simple as the name implies, wild and scenic. And when people are using that river recreationally, the goal is to keep it as wild and scenic as possible. By removing this 50 acres, there is no effect, no visible effect for anybody on the river, and that's in accordance with the DNR hydrologist and our zoning director. And in fact, the zoning director thought a 500-foot corridor would be plenty, and we'd get significantly more than that. And so I would say that while the maximum is extra acreage, removing this does not undermine the intent of the original statute.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Jackson. I'm also concerned because these sorts of issues have cropped up in other places in similar situations throughout the state. But, you know, I think that I just want to be sure that you had kind of covered all bases in regard to the fact that, you know, there may be opposition and concern that isn't necessarily simply about can we see the gravel pit. Then there's, can we hear the trucks running in the gravel pit? And I recognize that, you know, the actual highway runs pretty close to the edge here, so I'm not sure what kind of an argument that is. But I know that that has been an issue in other situations that might be like this. It's not just what you see, but what you hear, you know, a lot of other things like that. And I don't know to what extent the protections exist. And I guess, you know, maybe I would want to hear a little bit more from, you know, some of the folks you visited with, either DNR or somebody else with water that has that jurisdiction.
And Representative Jackson?
Well, I believe Julie Ekman is still here if she wants to address this. Also, the 80-acre parcel to the immediate west of what we're talking about is not in the wild scenic designation, and it also has gravel on it. And we have, because gravel pits have been very controversial in my area. We have a lot of local regulation about gravel extraction, everything from hours and crushing and number of trucks, because it can be a use that the neighbors aren't real crazy about. And there are a lot of protections there for that, but that's because those are really valid concerns of yours.
And I don't know if Ms. Ekman wants to testify or answer any questions for Representative Taylor.
If I may, Chair, Rebecca Wooden is here from the Division of Waters, and she is the supervisor of our land use program. I think she's better suited to answer these questions.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Rebecca Wooden, and I'm the supervisor of the Land Use Program, Land Use Unit for the Division of Waters at the Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
And I'm not going to speak to Ms. Ekman anymore for putting me on the spot.
Okay. Sorry to put you on the spot. I don't know if Representative Taylor, if you wanted to repeat the question that you'd had earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Wooden, sorry for putting you on the spot, but I just have concerns because I know that, you know, as Representative Jackson also alluded, you know, gravel seems to be one of those lovely contentious things, and if lowering the lake level only gets you to an eighth, I don't know where gravel gets you, but it can be on that list as well. But I do have concerns for you know, for what's happening, you know, or what could happen with precedents. It's not that I'm necessarily opposed, it's just that when you start doing things with gravel in an area that would be already designated as well as the Pink River, you know, what would be the long-term or unintended consequences, and I'm just wondering what sort of research and thoughts your division has put in on this. Thank you.
Ms. Wooden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Taylor. The department shares your concern about precedent this set the legislature has considered removing other parcels from the Wild Scenic River District. I know that Representative Cornish has called me personally about some that were removed on the Mississippi River. I would say in those cases where the department did not oppose the removal, it was perhaps because these parcels were maybe on the other side of a highway and clearly disjoined from the river. Or that on the state of Mississippi, we had a pretty major public process up there where parcel removal was considered and addressed by the public. So I would say in general, we'd like to see at least some public vetting before parcels are removed from the river district. And we are concerned about the precedent of being nibbled away at, as you say. Our hydrologist has been out on the site, and I know has discussed with representatives, is this far enough away to not be seen and preserve the visual aspect, and is there enough buffering? And they have made a change in their original proposal, which we appreciate. But yes, we have not done an analysis of how far the sound might carry in that area, or what exactly will there be hot mix that's also smelly on the site, and I don't think we know enough about what's proposed there to comment on the actual impact. But on a broader question of precedent, it is a concern to the department, but we're not opposing this particular removal.
Okay, and we do have one other question, and just to remind folks that we do have a few other bills to get through yet, and we do have to relinquish this room at 6:30 for another committee, just to remind members. So, Representative Pascal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed it, Representative Jackson, but at the outset there, and I've been trying to look at this map, and it looks to me like we're dealing with Section 14. It doesn't show up real good on this page here, but I think I got Section 14 out of it. And above that, then, is Section 11, and my question involves Section 11, and how did we get to the point where Section 11, we're so much closer to the river with that corridor than we are in Section 14? It just kind of looks like they just didn't want to do any survey, and so they just went with existing ownerships or something. I it doesn't make much sense to me to be so dramatic like that.
Well, the
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Purcell. That was my reaction when I saw this map laid out for the first time, was that it appeared that it was certainly ease of description to take a whole 80, and in the case of, let's see, where are we, 13? Yeah, you're right, in 11, you know, you'll find areas, well, all along the map with very little buffer, you know, certainly less than 500 feet, all the way to what appears to be, well, if it's an 80 across, it's going to be what, 1,600 feet. And so it certainly was probably for ease of description, because you just, and knowing that the commissioner could designate 320, the easiest way to designate 320 acres is to do it in these large blocks of 80 acres and 40 acres. And in some cases, the distance is really quite large.
And Representative Pascal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not a big proponent of taking land out of protective status or whatever, but it does appear to me that unless there's some, you know, significant ecological significance of, you aren't moving any further closer to the river here than it is in Section 11. You wouldn't be doing anything in Section 14 that isn't done in Section 11. Am I looking at that right there? It looks like about the same distance from the river. So I would just ask if there's some ecological reason that the DNR would have, or is it just the precedent thing, or
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Jackson, I believe it is the precedent, and the conversation that I've had with Mr. Locasmo is this is not the preferred way to do it. And I agree that this is not the preferred way for me to do it either, except that we're in a situation where it's crunch time. And if we are to utilize quality gravel that is lies within, what, 4 or 5 miles, at, not even, within, what, 2 miles, of the very highway improvements we're going to do, it was a unique opportunity to actually, I think, have a smaller overall impact when you're not hauling that far away. Also, I'd like to bring your attention to Section 2. It's at the very top of the map where you see County Road 11 and 169, and if you see a 40-acre parcel that's white,
yeah,
it's a gravel pit. Now, it's kind of a spent gravel pit. With much, not much quality left anymore, but that never even made it into the designation. And maybe that's because it had been used prior to the 1970s and there was no point in it. However, once it's been established that there's no use in trying to haul gravel out of there, I'd prefer to see them do some restoration and actually create a better buffer up there where they have very, very little. I've been to that gravel pit, and honestly, maybe the river's changed a bit, but it looks like the pit goes right up to the river.
And Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple real quick questions, Representative Jackson. Did the folks, when they originally got incorporated into this program, did they get any compensation?
Representative Jackson.
I don't know, but I can... I've got Mrs. Anderson here. No? Okay. And apparently not, and it was owned by the Jeff Anderson's parents.
Representative McNamara.
Okay, and I was, Representative, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jackson, I was speaking more broadly. None of the people that got put into this preserve program got any compensation. It was, they were just...
No, they did not.
I see Representative Hackbart nodding, and he's got some interest or some knowledge of it. Thank you. Then here would be my other question. Representative Jackson, you alluded to the property. You mentioned the property I was looking at. I thought it was unfortunate that that property is so close to the river at the intersection of 11 and 169. Has anybody ever, and you actually alluded to the other thing, it no longer is serving the purpose of a productive gravel pit. What about the possibility of making an exchange and enrolling that 40, for instance, and the Andersons negotiating with whoever owns it up there with that possibility of, did any of that get pursued?
Well,
Representative Jackson.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, the problem with the doing an exchange like that is the designation of 320 acres per mile of river. And, you know, I haven't mapped out quite everything or added up the acreage. I just did 14, 11, and the one below it just to kind of establish in my own mind because it appeared that the designation was made to the maximum allowed by law. And frankly, you know, we would have, as a third party, we'd have absolutely no control over that. I believe Knife River owns that, formerly Bowerly Brothers.
And Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But Representative Jackson, it's always amazing what happens when you start talking money and people sit down and all of a sudden how interested they are. I'm a huge proponent of gravel and not burying it and covering it up and not utilizing it. But I think we've got to be careful here as we go forward. And I would suggest that the Andersons look at different things, work with the DNR, look at the possibility of is there a way, can it temporarily be lifted? And also enroll other property or something like that. I think we have to be real careful if we start setting a precedent where we're just going to nibble away at it.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I will. House File 1900, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus landfill. Thank you, Representative Jackson. Thank you, Ms. Wooden.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Hanson bill. He had to go do a TV thing, and so I'll move House File 1727 before the committee, and I know Mr. Jaskey is coming down to testify. I also have an oral amendment, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move on page 3. On lines 3.8 and 3.9. On 3.8, delete the word perennial, and on 3.9, delete crops of. So it'll read the harvest of native grasses. And if you vote that in, then the bill's in the shape that Representative Hansen wants it, and then we can hear from Mr. Chasky very briefly and move ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Junkie moves House File 1727 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with the intention that it go to Environment Finance. And Representative Junkie also moves the oral amendment from line 3.8 to 3.9 after harvest, delete perennial crops, or. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And Mr. Jasky, if you'd like to testify to the bill as amended.
John Jasky, Director of Water, Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Chair, members, I can be very brief. The provisions in this bill that have already been discussed and passed out in House File 591, I think I will just skip those because you've already covered those and previously adopted those provisions. The ones that are different are beginning on line 2.18 through 2.20, and this is tied to the language that was just amended. What this simply does is it makes the lands that are part of a wellhead protection area as defined under Minnesota Statute 103I. Those wellhead protection areas would become eligible for enrollment in a RIM, Rivas Minnesota Conservation Easement, so it makes them eligible for inclusion. And then, as Representative Junkie noted, the language on 3.8 through 3.10 prescribes the kinds of activities that must be permitted on that site, which is simply the harvest of native grasses and seed for bioenergy production, because those kinds of activities would not compromise the conservation benefits of the easement. It would not compromise the purpose of putting it over a wellhead protection area. So, Mr. Chairman, members, that's the end of my testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Director Jasky. Any questions at all for Director Jasky? Representative McNamara?
Real quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Jasky, I'm trying to figure, would the combining of native grasses always be allowed on RIM? Yes.
Director Jasky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, those things can be allowed currently under law, provided they're included as acceptable activities under the conservation easement management plan that describes the activities that can take place. What this language would do on 3.8 to 3.10, it said that we must allow the uses that described here. We would condition those uses to make sure that the conservation benefits weren't compromised as part of that management plan, as we do now.
That's a maximum.
And just along those lines, this would require you, if somebody wanted to combine it, then to harvest the native grasses, as opposed to in the other situation where you would be involved in the decision and the method to be used, or whether it would happen or not.
Director Jasky. Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes, we must allow it. The details of how the harvest would occur, the time of the year, and so forth, could be conditioned in that management plan that goes with the conservation easement.
Just to clarify, I understood that right. So you feel comfortable, you could say it needed to be done by hand, or only 25% of it could be machine combined or something like that?
Director Jasky. Representative McNamara, yes, we would be able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions?
I renew my motion on 1727 as amended. The recommended pass refer to Committee on Finance, Environment Finance, heading that way.
Okay. Representative Junkie renews the motion that House File 1727 as amended be recommended to pass the Committee on Finance, the intention that it go to Environment Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Someone find Representative Eakin, he has a bill up.
Did you pass out the questions, Mr. Chair, that we're supposed to ask on this?
I did not. Representative Eakin, would you like to move your bill?
Yes,
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move that House File 2133 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with the intention that it goes to Environment Finance.
Very good. Why don't you go right ahead, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I do have an amendment as well that I would like to offer, the A2 amendment that I would like to move, and I do have an oral amendment that I would like to incorporate into that amendment.
Okay, this is the H2133A2 amendment, and do you want to give us the oral amendment, and then we'll adopt the amendment?
Sure. On line 1.6, Mr. Chair, at the end, after unchanged period, insert the calculation of the pre-development hydrology and is based on native soil and vegetation.
Sorry, I couldn't write that one quite as fast.
Yeah.
Somebody got that.
Say it again.
Do you want me to repeat that again?
Yeah.
Again, at the end, after unchanged period, insert the calculation of pre-development hydrology is based on native soil and vegetation, period.
Okay.
And if I could just have that incorporated.
That's a big incorporation, but okay. I have the calculation of pre-development hydrology is based on native soil and vegetation, period. Is everyone clear on got that? You've been scribbling. Well, let me just incorporate that into the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair, and then we'll vote on the amendment to put the bill in the form that you would like.
Sure.
Any questions to the amendment? All those in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Representative, you can see your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill calls for a study in the development of performance standards and other tools necessary to implement low-impact development and stormwater management techniques. It's really to update and improve upon the stormwater management in urban centers, and there's been a lot of changes that have occurred since the initial techniques and regulations went into place. This is designed to improve that, to update that, and I do have with me today Ms. Julie Westerlund, who is going to testify to the bill.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name and organization for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Julie Westerlund, and I'm with the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. And I'm also here today as the chair of the Low Impact Development Subcommittee of the Minnesota Stormwater Steering Committee. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Minnesota Stormwater Steering Committee, we're a collaborative group of partners that's comprised of numerous stakeholders, including state, regional, and local governments, cities, developers, consultants, and others that are interested in stormwater issues, and we've got approximately 7 different working groups of the steering committee, and my Low Impact Development Committee was one of those. So I'm here today in that capacity as well.
LID.
Low Impact Development, that's right. We're going to talk about that today. I do have a brief presentation for you, and what we're here to talk about is really something that's long overdue. As Representative Ethan said, we're here to update the way we manage stormwater in the state of Minnesota.
If I could just interrupt, I believe we have the room until 6:30, and we still have the two of the land bill. Is that correct? So
I think we're
pretty warm and fuzzy to your topic here. So
I can run through it rapidly for you. No problem. I'm happy to kick it into high gear for you.
Okay.
What we're really talking about here is developing a methodology that's going to promote the widespread use of newer, more innovative, more effective stormwater management techniques across the landscape. And just sort of a really brief background on stormwater management. As we know, when we develop the landscape, we drastically change the way the water runs across the land, and we're sending a huge amount more water downstream much more rapidly, resulting in potential flooding, soil erosion, and a host of other pollutants getting into our waterways, and significant infrastructure costs to our communities. Typically, our approach to stormwater management historically has been the use of the tool we call conveyance, which is basically just getting that stormwater out of here as quickly as possible. And in the 70s, we kind of discovered that if you build a pond and hold that water back, it'll have some flood control benefits, and also the pollutants will drop out a little bit and will reduce the amount of pollutants that we're sending downstream and the speed with which they're going. And so that realization actually led to the proliferation of stormwater ponds across the landscape through the National Urban Runoff Program. And the NURP program was really a large study that established a calculation methodology that standardized the use of stormwater ponds so that everyone could agree what size of pond needed to be to get to a certain water quality standard. And it, at the time, in 1983, it was the best technology that we had. And stormwater ponds actually continue to be the dominant stormwater tool that we're using today, even though it's 2009 and we actually know that these techniques are not the most effective way to manage our stormwater. And in your handouts, you actually have an executive summary of a recent study that was put out by the National Academy of Sciences. And a couple of really key findings are on page 9 and are actually highlighted for you. One is that these past practices have been ineffective at protecting water quality and receiving water, and only partially effective in meeting flood control requirements. And the study goes on to say that stormwater control measures that harvest, infiltrate, and evapotranspirator, or use plants to get water back into the atmosphere, are critical to reducing the volume and pollutant loading of small storms, and indeed really are the only way we're going to be able to effectively manage stormwater in the future. So we know that we have better technology for keeping our water clean, but we're not using it to its maximum potential. And what we're trying to do here is propose this methodology that's similar to that National Urban Runoff Program that was the cutting edge in the 1980s, and really apply all we've learned about stormwater management in the past 20 to 30 years to get these better techniques being used on the ground. And what we're really talking about here is low-impact development, which you, Mr. Chair, alluded to earlier. And low-impact development is really an innovative approach to managing stormwater, where we're looking at everything from land conservation and conservation of critical habitat areas to minimizing street widths, parking lots, keeping our soils healthy, and using the services that nature provides to clean and filter stormwater rather than relying on engineered solutions like ponds and pipes, which we've been using historically. And you're familiar with a lot of these low-impact development techniques. They include things like rain gardens, porous pavement, parking lots, and other surfaces. And one key point that I'd like to point out is that these techniques really have multiple functions and multiple benefits. One of the best management practices that we're promoting is simply the use of trees and preserving trees in critical areas where they exist. And trees are an awesome stormwater management tool. They also give us the other benefits of habitat, carbon sequestration, which allows us to address climate change and global warming, air quality, and really making our communities better places to live by incorporating these stormwater features as amenities in our community. Low-impact development is really about keeping that raindrop where it falls and getting it to soak back into the ground as it would naturally in the natural environment, trying to mimic that natural hydrology. These best management practices that we're talking about using are engineered practices, so we know how to do them. And we know how to design them, but what we lack is that consistent set of performance standards like we had in the 80s with the NERC ponds, and we don't have the calculation tools that give everyone the agreement that, yes, this particular practice that you propose is going to result in the clean water that we all desire. So this minimum impact design standards that we're proposing really is a study that's going to yield several different products. One is simply a menu of this wide array of variety of best management practices that will be available for communities to use to get credit for managing their stormwater. We'll also be developing that calculation methodology through a study similar to what we used with the National Urban Runoff Program. And then a set of performance standards, which are going to be more stringent than any standards that we have out there right now and are going to result in cleaner water for us. This is not a reduction of stormwater standards. It's actually an increase in the stringency to which we're applying clean water standards. So, for example, if we had a residential development, that developer could customize the package of tools that they choose to use to design the landscape and manage the stormwater through the full menu of techniques, apply the calculation methodology. The designers and the reviewers could all look at it, agree, and say, yes, you can get credit for all of those techniques that you want to do, including things like street sweeping, which is the best management practice, but not a structural stormwater control. And again, resulting in that clean water, which we all desire. The final element of the mid package that we're proposing is a set of updates to community ordinances and zoning standards, because this idea of low impact development really touches a lot of facets of what communities do. They do zoning, they have subdivision ordinances which dictate their street widths and their parking lot requirements, size requirements, their setbacks which affect the driveway length. All of this affects how much of that hard cover we have that creates those pollution problems. It addresses things like their erosion control, tree, steep slope ordinances, their stormwater ordinance, and then also community programs like street sweeping and education, which communities should be getting credit for because they lead to clean water. So in the end, what we really want is a set of consistent standards statewide. We want to know that we all know how to meet the requirements at the federal, state, and local level. We want a clear process for design and review so everyone understands what's expected to get these innovative techniques into the ground, which is going to wind up being more cost-effective and give us our ultimate goal, which is protecting our natural and cultural heritage here in Minnesota and, of course, our water resources.
Great.
That's my presentation, so I'm happy to answer questions.
And sorry to make you rush.
That's okay.
What I'm getting from this is you're looking for a consistent set of performance standards and calculation tools, that, et cetera. And it does seem like you've got a lot of consensus here in your working groups. You've got the Builders Association listed here, so we're not going to have 20 people testify against the bill or anything like that, I guess. But, questions for members? Representative Bougainia.
This is coming kind of late. And I'm wondering why the Pollution Control Agency didn't request this in the governor's request for clean water money. And that's not something you can answer, I don't think, but I see the Pollution Control Agency here, and I wondered if they could, would mind answering that. Is that the right, Mr. Chair?
That's fine with me, just be conscious of the time. Hi, Ms. Thorvig, if you could introduce yourself to the tape, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Thorvig, Director of the Municipal Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and Mr. Chair, Representative Bougainia, if I didn't hear the question.
Representative Bougainia?
I wonder, with the consensus that we're hearing about, why this proposal wasn't part of the governor's recommendations for the Clean Water Fund. And secondly, is the budget, I mean, $500 million feels out of the woodwork to me. What would it cost? Do you have any idea? Mr. Chair and Representative Bougainia, this was actually an LPCMR proposal because it is research, and to try to identify the suite of tools that could be used for communities so that they could develop in a way that would eliminate their impacts to lakes, rivers, and streams. So it was just the choice of, and this was a PCA LCCMR request. So that was the approach that we used, so we did not include it in the governor's budget. I think the stakeholders of the low impact design
committee.
Yep. they felt that it was still a very, very good project, and they wanted to come forward and propose it as part of the Clean Water Fund. So we've been involved in the development of this. We supported it as an LCCMR proposal. For that reason, it was not included in the governor's budget, but we have been working with the group that is bringing this forward.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Eaton.
Ms. Burnett wanted to respond to that as well.
If you could give your name and association for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Lisa Burnett with the Builders Association of Minnesota. And in addition to Lisa Thorvig's response, Representative Genius, Senator Chaudhry had found out about this proposal and had asked the Builders Association of Minnesota and the Builders Association of the Twin Cities to come in and talk more about low-impact developments. We brought in Bob Engstrom, who is a low-impact development developer out in the Washington County area. He was very intrigued by what we brought forward with him, and he asked us to get something moving on this bill because he thought it was a great idea. So that's kind of the segue from where it's come from at such a short time.
Representative Virginia.
I just would comment that it's just been known for a while that this wasn't the man's LCGMR proposal, so I'm just trying to understand why it was not in the governor's proposal. But you can't answer that question, and I don't, it's just what I'm sitting here trying to figure out.
Anybody else interested in testifying for or against the bill? Well, Representative Eakin, I believe there's a minor OSE amendment on a date on here, line 0.25, or page 2, line 5 of the original bill.
Yes.
Turning
that
2012
would be,
to 2013.
Right. And thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could move that oral amendment to strike again on line 0.2.5. Strike 2012 and strike 2013.
Yeah, let's just do that as an oral amendment to change 2012 to 2013 on page 2, line 5. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. All right, adopted the oral amendment. Representative Eakin, would you like to renew your motion to that we pass House File 2133 as amended, be recommended to pass to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation to go to Environmental Finance?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Oh, that's great. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is passed and goes on to Finance. And why don't I just get Representative Bill going here and turn it back over to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Very good. Representative Dill, will you move the adoption of the Game, Fish, and Forestry Division reports for House File 1132 and House File 696?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'd make that motion that House File, the committee report on 1132 and House File 696 be accepted by the committee.
Very good. We'll vote on the adoption of the division reports. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. We've adopted the division reports. Representative Dill, do you, or no, we just moved, right? And then Representative Dill, would you like to move 1132?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 1132, recommend to pass and sent to Finance, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, the bill before you is regarding two things regarding timber and land. The first item in Section 1 encourages the DNR, requires the DNR to increase the amount of timber that they sell as appraised. That is something that they have been working on and trying to increase the amount. It also requires that the commissioner evaluate the timber sales that are sold using these methods and then report back to the legislature on the efficiency and appropriateness of that action. This is a small incremental move towards selling as appraised. I don't think that we'll ever end up selling all the timber as appraised because we use an auction process, either an oral auction or sealed bids on timber. This should be considered as a pilot project. Section number 2 regards forest management lease pilot, a pilot project. And if you can imagine the checkerboard of particularly, and not exclusively, but particularly from Highway 2 North, there's this really dramatic checkerboard of ownership between tribal, federal, state, private, school trust lands, every imaginable thing, and then paper company land, and literally millions of acres. There are places where the department owns land that are surrounded by other types of ownership that it's more difficult for them to manage. So the idea in this pilot project is to take a paper company, and I'm going to use one as an example. There are others. Or I should say I'm going to take a land management company, Forest Capital LLC, which has about 509,000 acres. No, 300,000 acres in Minnesota, rough thereabouts, that there might be a piece of land or numerous pieces of land around their land or inside of their ownership that the DNR might lease to the Forest Capital LLC, in my example, for a long-term management plan where they would, where the paper company would take over the management under approved plan by the department and manage it for the long term, so that the department then could use their resources to more appropriately manage and more efficiently manage lands that they do have good access to. So, members, that is the bill. I stand for questions.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Dill? Okay, I see none. So, Representative Dill, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that the bill be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. And then will that will hopefully go to Representative Wagenius's committee on the Environment Finance Committee.
Correct. So Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 1132, First Committee Engrossment, that's the right one? Okay, yeah, House File 1132, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with recommendation that it go to Environment Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 696, the exact same motion, actually, recommend to pass and send to the Finance Commission. Committee.
Okay, Representative Dill moves that House File 696, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that go to Environment Finance.
Thank you, Representative
Dill, there are amendments that you have?
Yes. And the first thing I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is to have the A3 amendment. The 696 A3 amendment to the bill. And that, Mr. I'll move that amendment. And that amendment, Mr. Chair, is an amendment to the deputy bill that we heard in the division regarding a piece of a strange looking, look, imagine a little roadway in a very highly developed area. And we found a few things that we weren't really comfortable with in the division. And we agreed to work on an amendment to get it into a position that we're comfortable with it. And I'd like just for the DNR, Ms. Lewis, if she's here, to come up. And I'll first just tell you what it does, the amendment. And it says that the natural resources shall sell to the city of Wayzata this small piece of land upon verification that they have an adjacent parcel, which happens to be a gas station, purchased. And secondly, is it says that they may make a deal for the land of not more than $100,000 plus transaction costs. The department has offered the land at $102,000, I think it was. The city has offered $50,000 in order not to impede that process. We said they can make, in this amendment, we'd say they could make the deal at $100,000, and if the department can come to some other resolution to that, they could go ahead. And lastly, and the third component of the amendment is that it be used for public purposes as a road, because that is what the city of Wayzata gave to our committee, was that it was a part of realigning a road for safety purposes, and they gave a map that showed exactly how they were going to realign the road. They need to buy the gas station. One of the reasons we want the gas station purchased, to at least have a purchase agreement for the adjacent parcel, is because I don't want the land to be sold to the city of Wayzata and then the gas station person hold up the state for money and say, well, geez, you know, you can't build your road without my gas station, so, you know, I want more than, you know, what I originally thought or said or agreed to. So these were the three things that we came to, and maybe Ms. Lewis, Mr. Chair, could either say yes, they agree, no, they don't agree, or why they do or don't agree.
Okay. Welcome, Ms. Lewis.
Thank you. My name is Kathy Lewis. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources. The DNR has been in negotiations with the city of Wayzata for the sale of this parcel, and DNR has no objections to be selling it to the city, and it's just a matter of reaching agreement on price, and we're in process negotiations, and the language of this amendment is acceptable to the DNR.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Any questions on the amendment?
Okay, seeing none, Representative Dill, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, I renew my motion on the A3 amendment, Mr. Chair, to House File 696.
Okay, Representative Dill renews his motion to pass the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And there is also an oral amendment. Did you want to offer that at this time?
Oral amendment, yes. I have the, I'd like to amend House File 1900 into House File 696, which was the Jackson bill that we heard earlier in this committee. And so I don't think there needs any explanation. The entire committee heard that bill, and that would be my motion, Mr. Chair. House File 1900.
Okay, Representative Dill moves that House File 1900, which we laid over, for consideration to be placed in House File 696B, included in 696, again, into House File 696 as amended.
Correct.
So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Any questions to the author about the bill?
Chair, we have one, there is one more amendment. Mr. Gazowski, A5 amendment.
Mm-hmm. Representative Gazowski, you have the amendment?
Yes, thank you.
A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, two things that were left out of the amendment. My miss on that. Line 1.6 between the words sell and 15, if you could insert at least, the two words at least, and then the second change would be at the very end of that same line. We intended to strike out the reference to mineral rights, so after the word leases, the comma, strike the comma, including any, and then on 9.17, mineral rights, comma. And
okay,
that would shore up the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so again, on line 1.6, between the word sell and 15, insert at least. And at the end of that sentence, you said strike the comma. And on line 1.7, well, it would just stay the same there, right?
Mr. Chair, strike the comma and then the words including any mineral rights and then the comma after it, so it reads correctly.
Okay. Did you just want to incorporate that into your amendment?
If I could, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Zyskowski incorporates those changes into the amendment, and Representative Zyskowski, you want to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had offered a bill that was heard before Representative Dill's committee, subcommittee, and that actually was a bill to sell 5,000 acres of ag lease land. This would be a small portion of that, 15 parcels, to give a test, if you will, to the market. I have contacted up to 7 different landowners who currently lease land, and all 7 of them in, and actually I know Representative Swales, or Representative Saylor, excuse me, had asked in that committee, and actually they called some in your district, or LA did, and 4 of them, the four that the LA had talked to were all enthusiastic, well, all said yes, they were interested in bidding. One was an enthusiastic yes. And I've talked to 3 others on the list, too. So working out the details of the department.
Okay. And Representative Dill.
Mr. Chair, I agreed to put the language in here as a placeholder language because we are going to Representative Wagenius' committee. This isn't done language, and I'm certain that the commissioner who's sitting here next to me is going to say that they're not ready to implement this. So if it goes on the bill, I'm okay with that because we can deal with that in Representative Wagenius' committee. If it doesn't go on the bill, there will be just as equally amount of work done on the amendment before Representative Wagenius' committee, and I expect that Representative Gazowski will bring it. Will be brought back at that committee in some way or another, offered by some member. So we're honored with the commissioner here. And I'm sure he wants to say a word, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll be brief. I know that we're running out of time here. I think everybody knows about the land sale requirements the Department of the State of Minnesota is under right now from language that was passed in 2005, extended in 2007. That requires the state to sell $6.44 million worth of land
before June 30th of 2009, and actually in the governor's supplemental budget it does contain language that extends that to 2010, but it does also have language that will take the amount that is not sold and unallot those dollars directly from the Department of Natural Resources budget. So they're banking on $2 million of the sales in 2009. If not, there'll be $2 million general fund unallotted from the department in 2009, of which we've already unallotted $5.2 million this year earlier. So that'd be a total of $7.2 million. Another $2 million in FY10 if we do not meet those goals as well. The land sale parcels in the bill all came from our area field staff. We asked our field staff earlier this past year to identify parcels kind of from a ground-up approach, looking at parcels that they manage every day that they feel should be sold either for land acquisition purposes to kind of improve our land holdings within the state, sell small parcels, non-contiguous parcels that are not able to be used for their intended purposes. There's some school trust parcels in the bill that we're asking for the authorization to sell. We aren't going to sell those right now, but we're asking the legislature for the authorization to show the department's fiduciary responsibility and our willingness to work on school trust issues. We'll sell those when the market does come back. These ag lease lands are small pieces of land that are often in holdings within a WMA, a forestry, a state forest, school trust lands, ConCon lands, so they have different dispositions. None of these lands came to us from our area managers that should be sold. The message that we're getting is maybe if people don't want the DNR to be leasing ag land, then we'll stop doing these leases. But the leases are to landowners who are adjacent to these parcels of land. We're trying to do it for wildlife management purposes, to provide some relief from those for private lands so the animals can have a place to eat and rest. And also as a good neighbor policy that these landowners, where they're farming a field and there's an 8, 10, 12, 4-acre plot that they can go in and plant and have some benefits there as well. We've been trying to work with Representative Drakowski, but it's just to have us sell these lands right now, it kind of gives us a mixed message as to what we should be doing with our lands, which, you know, we are getting kind of a mixed message. People are telling us to buy land. People are telling us to save land, not sell land. But yet we have to meet this $6.44 million requirement as well. So we don't support the amendment at time. We're trying to work with Representative Dukowski to try to figure out if there is a solution to this at all. But these leased ag lands do provide value out there, and it does make sense for us to be doing this with these private landowners and keep these lands in state possession at this time.
Okay. Representative Wardenia.
If this amendment goes on, I hope we have a conversation, or people are ready to have the conversation of how selling these lands and then buying heritage lands squares with the Constitution.
Madam Chair, or Commissioner Chair, Representative Wardenia, that is something we are concerned about, trying to figure out how we do this. The lands that are in the bill today, they contain some wildlife management areas that we've acquired through custodial control or transfer from MnDOT through Veterans Affairs through the Department of Administration. Any lands that we're looking to sell to come up with that 6.44 total. Right now there's about 4.2, I believe, that's left to be sold on the books. We are not using lands that were purchased with bond dollars, purchased with game and fish dollars that were donations. We're looking at strictly lands that are received from custodial control or transfers from other units of government. So you do bring up a good point, Representative Wardenia, one that we need to talk about as a group, executive branch, the legislative branch, and make sure that we are not causing any problems at that level.
Okay. Any other discussion,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Drakowski.
Mr. Chair, actually, I'd like to withdraw my amendment at this point to work on it further with the department for the next committee.
Okay. Representative Drakowski withdraws the A5 amendment. Any further discussion to the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion. House File 696 is amended. Be recommended to pass.
Representative Hackforth has a question here, so. Go ahead, Representative Hackforth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the A6 amendment.
Okay.
There we go. This is one that was just handed out, I think, a bill or two ago.
Yeah.
Or the last bill, I think they handed it out. So you should all have a copy of the A6 amendment, and Representative Hackforth to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an issue that I think this has been around for a couple of years, and it's really some comfort language. I think the DNR and the Veterans Affairs is really doing this already, but this is to direct them to put it in statute so it's going to happen and make sure that they keep working on it. That's really all this is to say that the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Commissioner of the Veterans Affairs will work cooperatively together to locate some alternative sites for a new Veterans Cemetery, and I think we need to do this, put the statute for it, continue working on it to come up with a new site. I've met with Representative Duncan and with Representative Dill. They're okay with language, and I think the DNR is okay with it, too.
Okay. Anyone wanted to address that? Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, members, the DNR is working with Veterans Affairs. They have before. We will continue to do so. They obviously have no trouble with the language.
Okay. Representative Junkie.
I just want to add to this. If you were watching the Senate bonding bill, there's actually a $3 million appropriation in there to buy a parcel in Redwood County for Veterans Cemetery. It's not in the House bonding bill. And on the auspices of not buying more land, which I think is a good thing that we've all been talking about here, I'm not convinced we should. I'm not in the Senate, but we didn't put it in the House. It's a Conan bill. But what I've asked Representative Conan to do, which correlates with this, we've already identified there's need for a veteran cemetery in southwest Minnesota, which is where this parcel for sale is. But we have state parks, county parks, city parks. We probably have veterans out there who are landowners who would donate land for a veteran cemetery. I don't think we have to be purchasing land for a veteran cemetery, because we have enough public land. We've been talking about it here. So now to go out and somehow spend millions and millions of dollars to purchase a parcel in southwest, and we're looking for a parcel up by Duluth, which the one we had was in park, but that's kind of fallen through now, so we're looking for an alternative site. But again, I agree with Representative Hackbar. I think we should work together and identify parcels that we already own that can be used, that are gorgeous parcels and appropriate parcels. So I think it's a good amendment.
Any further discussion?
Fully informed, ready to vote, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, Representative Hackbarth renews his motion to pass the A6 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Duncan.
I have a question. My roommate came into the room. He's standing up there, and he wants me to ask the author about a parcel of land that's been owned and has a house on it from one of his constituents since 1912, and now when they've been GPSing it, they find out it's on government land, and he drafted up some language to address it. He says it's not in this bill as drafted, Representative Dill. And he wants explanation on that. I see he's up with Bob Myers right now. Maybe he can even come to the table and tell us why. But he's afraid this constituent who's owned this since 1912 is going to have to sell that parcel because it's not drafted right in this bill, or lose their house or whatever. So can you explain why the drafted language that was supposed to be in here is not in here?
Representative,
how about that for a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Junkie. And, you know, I just don't always fall out of bed and offer Representative Rukavina's amendments, because I know sometimes I can end up in the paper by doing so. And I see people shaking their head yes. So I actually support what Representative Rukavina is trying to do, and we are trying to get to the bottom of where the real problem is. And Mr. Kudelka today spent a considerable amount of time trying to get to the bottom of this, and I don't know if he totally resolved it or not. Maybe he'd like to tell us that. If not, and we do find that it isn't the way it's supposed to be in this bill, I am going to change it, if I'm still alive, after the wrath of Rukavina and Representative Wagenius's committee.
Any further discussion?
Seeing none, Representative Bill.
I'd like to renew my motion that the bill be recommended to pass, sent to, to finance with further referral to Environment Finance.
Okay, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 696, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance with the intention that it go to Environment Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you. And with that, meeting is adjourned.